Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And if you'd like to join us, it's pretty simple. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960. We have five lines open. Gil is the pilot of this plane. He's only responsible for answering the phones and telling me who's on the call. But if the show crashes or if I get into trouble or something like that, then Gil is just not responsible at all. And he's the one that answers the phone. So if you have a car question, 602-508-0960. In the car repair industry, as you can imagine, trying to just get a handle on all the different cars, makes, models, years, technology, stuff like that is difficult, but there is a common denominator. When we went to electronic everything in the mid-90s, actually it goes back to the early 80s, but pretty much across the board in the 90s, it's just a matter of voltage. So one means that the car is idling, and 5 volts means your throttle's on the floor. One, your car is not moving, and 5 means that you're going 100 miles an hour. Engine vacuum, a low reading means your foot's on the floor, so we're going real fast, and a very high reading means you're idling. So it's just a matter of voltages, it's just a matter of numbers, and the difficult part for most consumers is knowing who to trust. One of the conversations that we have on a regular basis is the code the car has. Folks, no one can fix your car with just the code. The code tells you what state the computer thinks the problem is in. So when the check engine light comes on, and notice that it's typically orange or yellow, and that means caution. That doesn't mean stop, because your oil light is red when it comes on. That means stop. Your overheat light, in an exaggerated way, means red, and it will be red, and it's telling you to stop. So there's lots of cues, and this has happened since the 80s and certainly the 90s for sure, that we have these checks and balance the system. On the internet, there's a lot of people on Facebook that are friends of mine, and I am friends of theirs. And so anything to do with a car or the check engine light or an engine code or something like that usually gets filtered through me. And I think the most disturbing thing is that you'll have a check engine light, and the code will have to do with the oxygen sensor, and there could be 4 of them in your car. And so what happens from the viewpoint of a shop guy like me that owns a shop and that repairs these cars, the car will come in to us, and the customer's clearly frustrated. Now, it could be the husband, it could be the son, it could be a well-meaning neighbor, whatever. But there's this commonality where we took it over to the auto parts store, and they told us it was an oxygen sensor code. So we bought one, and then the oxygen sensor code came back, and the guy at the auto parts said, well, you have 4 of them. And so you put 4 of them in there, and now the bill is in excess of $500. And then the check engine light comes on again. And so at that particular point, most folks will just say, okay, never mind, we're not going to do this anymore, and go get help. Well, the car comes in, and we open up the hood, and we can see that all the oxygen sensors are brand new. So we already know what's going on. It's no secret. We've seen it 100 times. But the problem is that you spend a bunch of money, and then, of course, in the case of most men, they'll say, well, it needed them anyway. Never mind that there may be $400, $500, $600 worth of oxygen sensors, not including labor, just the cost of the parts, but it needed them anyway. Here's the thing. This is how everything works. The oxygen sensor looks at the exhaust, and the exhaust, just for simple terms, the exhaust is going to be some fuel and some air. That's all there is to it. And if we consume all the fuel, there'll be a lot more air and a lot less fuel. If the car is the other way around, where we have a whole lot of fuel and not enough air, then we've got a problem because something is overfueling the engine. But the oxygen sensor is telling us what's going on. It's the tattletale, but it's not telling us, it's not smart enough to know if it's the problem or if there's another problem. But it doesn't stop people from just replacing, all the codes and going to the auto parts store and buying all the parts. It still doesn't make it. The oxygen sensor, when it tells you that the car doesn't have enough fuel, A plugged fuel filter can cause an oxygen sensor code. A plugged fuel filter. What that does is restrict the amount of fuel being delivered to the engine, so when the computer opens the faucet, it thinks that two turns is normal. In reality, two turns is, he could open it up 10 turns and it's restricted. So we don't have good flow through the fuel filter. It's plugged up. So fuel filter can cause it. Vacuum leaks can cause it. An oxygen sensor rich coat can cause from the fuel pressure regulator is damaged and it's sucking raw fuel. There's just all these things. And unfortunately, nobody at the auto parts store is going to be able to diagnose your car because there's tests involved. So we have to test the system. We have to create an air leak to see if that drops down our mixture control. We have to add fuel to see if that brings up our lean and rich mixture. We're going to be testing the oxygen sensor first to see if it can see both ends of its parameters. So it should see full lean and it should see full rich. Lean means too much air, not enough fuel. Rich means way too much fuel and not enough air. And of course, what the engine is aspirating, what it's breathing in, has everything to do with your power, your performance, your idle quality, your miles per gallon. So the computer's making changes with respect to the flow of fuel into the engine. It depends on who you talk to, from 100 times to 1,000 times a second. So it's just moving along. But those are the kinds of issues that are going to save you money. It's a good idea when if you have a check engine light, you could go to the auto parts store and memorialize the code. They'll give you a piece of paper and tell you all the possibilities it could be. I agree the piece of paper is valuable, but I don't agree that you should start with possibility one and go from there. That's a bad idea. So at least you have that. You can also ask the three-whisker kid at the auto parts store to just reset the code. He can do that with his little plug-in device. So then you can drive it, and if it comes back on, the check engine light comes back on, you know, 3 days later, 3 weeks later, you can then look at it and have him pull the next code, and if they're the same, then the problem is still there. And it's at that point you have a tough time on what you're going to do. You can call a mobile mechanic. Hopefully he can find the problem, and he has the necessary knowledge and equipment to find the problem and then replace the problem. But the other day we had a car bring in to us, and the oxygen sensor screws into the exhaust system. As you can imagine, it's not as bad as many places in the United States, but Arizona, we still get oxygen sensors that are just stuck in their hole in the exhaust system. And you have to be smart enough to know that if you put an air gun on that oxygen sensor and you try to bring it out and you break it off, you're in trouble. You're going to have to replace a portion of the exhaust because you just broke the oxygen sensor that plugs into the exhaust. And there's no such thing as just reaching down there with your fingers and unscrewing it. It's not going to happen. So you better have the right equipment. You better have the right knowledge. Otherwise, you're going to replace that portion of pipe because we have to have the O2 sensor in that portion of the pipe. That happens once a year, we see, maybe. So the idea is the part of the process is diagnosing it correctly. And we have these handheld devices. Folks, I spent $33,000 for my very first house 45 years ago. $33,000. I have test equipment in my repair shop that exceeds that value today. We have all kinds of fancy-dancy pieces of equipment that give us information. And you can look at it and say, okay, I know exactly what the problem is. We're running really rich on bank 2. So I have to, oh, look there. The fuel pressure regulator is plugged into bank 2. You disconnect the fuel pressure regulator. All of a sudden, we start seeing a lean condition take over. And then you go, okay, well, that's what's going on. Those are the kinds of things that happen. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Car repair is pretty easy, but when it comes to maintenance, that's where you're probably going to have your most interaction with your repair shop. In the old days, we got to see you every 3,000 miles. Oh, by the way, the phone number, I'll give you that real quick, 602-508-0960. If you have a comment or a question, 602-508-0960. So in the old days, and I've been working on cars since 1968. I worked at a gas station in Tempe when I was in high school, at Tempe High School. So it's changed. The gas prices changed. The gas volumes changed. The composition of the gas has changed. But the fundamental knowledge is air, fuel, and timing. So we need spark. We need to explode the spark with the spark plug, and we need it to be, happen at a particular time. Today's carburetors are gone. We don't use carburetors anymore. And so the computer is running a fuel injection system, so it can spray the fuel like this, tss, 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 which is idle. Or it can be, now think about this. If this is idling, tss, 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 now what is this? Pssst, that's wide open throttle, okay? That's really how it is. We look at the dwell, we look at the spray. And so if it's just a little bit of spray and we're idling, that's good. That's what we want. But if we go out and drive it and we stuff it to the floor, then we want to look at the O2 sensor. We want to see it run rich. We want to see the fuel pressure drop a bit and then come back up. Okay, everything's working good. But you have to know that. So I'm not trying to talk you into going to the shop and having them check, do all your check engine lights and stuff. I'm just trying to give you an idea. And what the auto repair shop or the auto parts guys tells you that it's this and if it's that's not it, it's going to be this or this. So you spent $300 or $400 guessing, and you bring it into us, and then sometimes, not very often in my shop, but sometimes the customer will be really upset because he's already spent $300 or $400 or $500 guessing, and maybe the diagnostic the fee at the shop is quoted at $150, $175. Unfortunately, it's not our problem; it's your problem, and unfortunately, you spent some bad money. Just, if you want to find a good repair shop, stop by an auto parts store and ask them who buys parts that doesn't return them, which means the shop's not buying a part, trying it on the car. It didn't fix it, so they return it to the auto parts store. Auto parts stores hate that. But the guys that buy the part and never return them are the guys that are accurately and appropriately diagnosing your car. That's what it's all about. When we come back, we're going to talk about oil changes. In the old days, we did an oil change every 3,000 miles, and today, many of you have cars that are disserviced annually, and sometimes between 15 and 20,000 miles on oil change intervals, so we'll talk about that. But if you want to join us, or if you have a car question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Gil will answer the phone, and we'll answer your question on the other side of the break, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We've got a couple of callers, but let me explain. If you call in, and the number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, you just give me your year, make, and model of the car, and we're going to talk symptoms. What's it doing? Well, it does this. Does it do it fast or slow, left or right? Do you feel the vibration in the seat of your pants, or do you feel it in the steering wheel? When it misfires, does it chug real bad? Can you feel the misfire or not? Those are the kinds of give and take questions we're going to have. So it's pretty simple. And you can use you ladies can use any name you want, because we don't keep track of that kind of stuff. And the guys, you can use your brother's name if you want to blame him for it. But anyway, Tony, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I recently just bought a Dodge 5.9 diesel pickup.
Okay.
I bought it from the original owner, and he tells me he's always run the Dello 400 engine oil.
Uh-huh.
Is this a good thing, or is this a bad thing? Should I use a different oil, or?
Okay, so I'm going to change your question. Mark, do you have lots of oil at your shop? Yes, we do. And Mark, what kind of oil do you pour? Is it one brand, or do you have a variety of brand? No, it's Dello. So, always pour is Dello, and that's Chevron. That motor doesn't know if you put Valvoline or Quaker State or Dello or Motorcraft or any kind of oil. It doesn't know what kind of motor. It's the weight that's important. It's the weight that's important. So in your particular case, you can continue to use Dello. It's not that important that you do it, because your motor won't know. But the weight is important. So if he's been using a 020, then you use a 020. But if you don't use a 020 and you go to a 1030, the motor's not going to really know the difference anyway. So you can do whatever. But the most important thing I think you should ask him is number one, what was your oil change interval, and what was the weight of the oil that you used? Those are the two things that would be best for your motor. But I want to tell you something. Even if you change the brand and you change the weight, I can't think of a reason why the motor would all of a sudden decide to pay you back by blowing up underneath your hood. I've not seen that before, and I've been in this business a very long time, so I don't think you need to sweat this, but that's what, if you want to get lined up again, then just ask the owner about that, okay?
Is the Dello, is that synthetic, or is that semi-synthetic, or what?
Well, the weight will tell us that. If it's a 020 or something like that, then it's typically a synthetic. And that's what I use in my truck. And I have a 5, well, your 5.9 is a smaller diesel. I have a 6.7, and I have a Dodge truck. And I change my oil every 10,000 miles, and I use a Dello synthetic. A diesel Dello okay. synthetic. That's what I use. Now, if I was going to go and I was in Utah and I needed an oil change and they happened to sell Valvoline or Quaker State, or I would just take it. It would be okay. My motor's not going to all of a sudden turn itself inside out and start spitting parts on the ground because I changed the brand of the oil. So don't worry about that, okay?
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, you betcha. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you, Tom?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2005 Ford Ranger with a 4-liter V6 and an automatic transmission.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you can explain to me, I'm thinking about changing the motor on it. It has almost 300,000 miles. I use it as a work truck. It's, you know, it's running like a motor with 300,000 miles right now. Anything could happen at any day. I'm like, can you tell me what I would need to look at to change the motor?
Somewhere between $6,000 and $10,000.
And I was out looking at new truck prices, and I thought this has got to be cheaper than replacing this thing. So,
well, let's talk about your dilemma. First of all, if you wanted to know if there was anything on the horizon, you'd change the oil, and you'd go 1,000 miles, and you'd take an oil sample and send it into the lab. Then you'd do it at 2,000 miles. Then you'd do it at 3,000 miles, and you'd send them into the lab. The lab said, nope, everything is stable. You're not shedding brass. You're not shedding stainless steel. You're not shedding aluminum. You're not shedding iron. The stability of the oil is good. There's no coolant. There's no fuel in the oil. So at that point, 300,000 miles doesn't mean nothing. The motor's fine.
Really?
And so you look at the oil to tell you that. So I don't know that I would be planning on it. I'll tell you, every motor we replace has been damaged by the person who had their hands on the steering wheel.
Right.
Every one of them that has been overheated or run low on oil, it was the same explanation. Well, I was only a mile from home, or I looked down and it was in the red, and I did. I don't know how long it was in the red. So we do motors, but it's always that kind of an explanation. So if you just kind of pay attention to the dash warning lights and don't have the stereo up too loud, you should be okay.
All right, that's all I needed to know. I had heard you tell somebody at one time when it starts belching out smoke to the point that you can't see the person behind you, it might be time.
Well, yeah, there's,
I'm not there yet.
No, there's a couple of those. You're right. When you start belching blue or black or white smoke out the tailpipe, you're in trouble. That's not something I'm going to let you take, you know, somebody in my family to Tucson with. And then if it starts developing tremendous internal pressure and all of a sudden you've got a bunch of oil leaks that you didn't have before, that's the beginning of the end. When the temperature gauge goes into an area it's never been before, so if the temperature gauge goes in and it flirts with the red where before it ran 5/8 to 3/4 on the dash, then that's the beginning of the end typically. But until that happens, everything is fine. So forget the odometer. Just keep driving it and take care of it, okay?
As far as having that oil sample checked, is that something I can have my mechanic do? Or
you can do it yourself. You can take your jar in when you have the oil change done and just tell him when you pull the drain plug, let it go out 1, 2, and then stick this in there and grab 3, 4, 5, and just put the lid on it, put it on the dashboard for me. So you've just got an oil sample, and then you get on the internet and you send it to some laboratory, and they'll tell you. But you need more than one sample to compare. So if we if we have one sample and it's 5,000 miles old, and then the next sample is 5,000 miles old, and all the values are the same, nothing's wrong with that motor. It's not shedding metal. It doesn't have a coolant problem. It doesn't have a fuel problem. Everything is fine. So you need more than one sample to come to a conclusion.
All right. I appreciate the info. It's okay. Going to save me a lot of money.
Well, good. Good, Tom. Thank you very much for that. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Let me tell you what's going on in our industry. In the old days, we used to be able to bite on your wallet every 3,000 miles for an oil change. So every time you came in, we get to sell you something. And I remember those days because I was in high school during those days, and I saw the technicians do that. Well, you need a tire rotation every other oil change. You need spark plugs, you know, here. You need to replace the hoses and the belts. And then they started with the fluids, the transmission, the brake fluid, the cooling system, the transfer case, the rear differential. I mean, just on and on and on. Well, here's what's happened. And I've been doing this since 1968. Right now, we have cars that have 10 and 15,000 mile oil change intervals. We don't get to see you for 8, 10, 12, 15,000 miles. Well, if we don't get to see you, we don't get to sell you anything. So you bring your thing in, and of course, the oil change is going to be a synthetic, and it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of $150 to $200. But then we're going to sell you lots of stuff. And you have to be aware that your owner's manual is the Bible for your car or your truck. So when someone tells you that you're due for a bunch of injector flushing, brake fluid flushing, cooling system flushing, then you have them write down all that information, tell them to write it down, send it to my email address, and then you get your owner's manual out, and here's what you're going to find. Many times, did I say that correctly? Many times, you're going to find out that the owner's manual calls for a cooling system flush at 100, you're at 55,000, and they're telling you you're already due for a cooling system flush. There's a problem there. The question is why? Why are you telling me that? Well, it's because we don't get to do a whole lot of maintenance on your car for the first 100,000 miles. It all really comes in towards the top end of that, 80 to 100,000. Spark plugs and fluids and hoses and belts and timing belts and da, 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 da. But we only get to bite at you once every 100,000 miles, other than oil changes. Well, that's changed a lot. There's a lot of business that we've lost because of these long oil changes. So I am finding, and I see on a regular basis, that different places are lying about the intervals, and they're going back to the 70s, and they're saying, yep, you got to change everything at 30,000. No, not today, and we'll be right back. So welcome back, everybody. Let me clarify something, because I had a friend of mine call me, and he goes, you know what? You need to talk about, if we pull your dipstick, forget the mileage on your car. If we pull the transmission dipstick, we want the fluid to be pink. We want to be able to see through it, so it's on the dipstick and we can see the dipstick through it. If it's brown mud, then you need a transmission service. But in order to do that appropriately, then the shop should take you outside and say, here's a can of your fluid, and watch how I stick this screwdriver in there and look at the fluid. It's pink, it's opaque, you can see right through it. Now, I'm going to take and wipe that new fluid on this paper towel. Then I'm going to take your dipstick and wipe the fluid next to it. See the difference? Yours is brown, yours has got specks of metal in it. This is pink, this is clean, it's opaque. That's the difference. So forget, at that point, forget about the mileage on your owner's manual. You need to have your transmission fluid. They might say to you, hey, the moisture content in your brake fluid is 5, and we need it less than 2. So at the appropriate time, we need to flush your brake system. Those are the kind of conversations, but you can say to them, can you test it in front of me? I'd like you to see you do that. We like to demonstrate our skills. Our industry likes to demonstrate our technology and our skills and the equipment we have to service your car. So don't be afraid to ask that. Saul, good morning to you. How can I help you?
The wife is calling.
Hello, Saul?
Yes.
Yes,
hi.
Sir. Go ahead.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for your show. I really appreciate it. I've been listening for a long time. I'm going to go in a little different direction. I know you're on fluids and oils and stuff like that. Can I ask you about a collision situation?
As long as you don't use any names, yes, you can. And just, you know, get to the question as quickly as you can. But, yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, no names. Rear end. No damage, my daughter's car, and I said you still should take it into a body shop because you don't know underneath a frame or whatever if there's any damage, even though your vehicle, she was rear-ended, even though your vehicle isn't showing any outer damage. I'm on your website, okay. And I just wonder if there's a shop you recommend, or...
Well, just look at the body shops. There's a couple of body shops on there, or a mechanical shop. Any mechanical shop can do. And what you're asking them to do is, would you put the car up in the air and look to see if there's any damage visible because she was hit on this corner or the back of the bumper? That's what you're looking for. The answer is yes. There's some shock absorbers on the rear bumper, and we can see when they're collapsed on one side because it's cleaned the dust off, but on the other side, the dust is still there, so we know that the car was hit on the right rear. We can look to see if the shock absorber's damaged or broken or leaking oil. That's bad. We can also look at the frame members because your unibody car has a frame for the front and a frame for the back. So we can look at all of that. Most mechanical guys can do that. But it is very, very smart because 6 months from now, when she finds out that the car's going down the road with the butt to the right 6 inches and it's going down the road crooked, the insurance company's not going to raise their hand and say, yeah, we'll perform that $2,000 repair for free. That's not going to happen. So, yes, you need to have somebody just look it over. What part of town do you live in?
Phoenix, zip code 85023.
Just give me the major cross streets.
Major cross street would be Thunderbird and actually the I-17 freeway.
Okay, well, Kurtz Automotive is on Bell and I-17, and they can certainly look underneath that car for you. And so can Action Auto Repair. He's up on Deer Valley and I-17. So Kurtz or Action Auto, either one of those, you can just say to them, my daughter was rear-ended, and I'd like you to put the car up on a hoist and look at the back end and see if you see anything that's terribly wrong. That's it.
Yeah, that's what I told her. You know, it's better, like just like you just said, you know, 6 months from now, whenever something going wrong, you're not going to be compensated for that.
No, you're not, and especially because the other insurance company's looking for a reason not to pay for the car, your daughter's car, because their client was driving and had their head somewhere where it wasn't supposed to be. So yeah, it's now's the time to do it. Anyway, I got to go, Sol, but thank you very much. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning. A 97 Ford Crown Vic. Every time I turn the ignition on, the windshield wipers wipe 3 times.
I have used that example so many times, and
really,
I have, because it's, you know, the windshield wiper flap. You know, that's really tough to track down. The first thing a lot of us will do is there an issue? We're going to look at the owner's manual too, and we're going to look at some of the technology the car has, because is it supposed to see moisture on the windshield and then start flapping the wipers? So if it's got that situation, it should be in the owner's manual. And if that's the case, then it's probably a windshield problem. It could also be the turn signals. If the wipers are on the turn signal arm, it could be a problem there. But, yes, that is something that we see at least once or twice or 3 times a year, where we have the wipers come on for no reason at all. And almost always it can be tracked down and fixed. So it's either going to be a switch problem, it's going to be a connection problem. But the motor's not going to flap the wipers until we provide the ground or the power. See, so we provide a ground to the motor, but when we want it to move, we apply power, 12 volts to it. So one of those legs is providing a ground when it's not supposed to. So on a 1 to 10 scale, this is about a 3 or a 4.
Okay. Necessarily need to bring it to a shop, obviously.
Yeah. You know, do it with an oil change. Hey, by the way, and then have your daughter or you write down exactly what you do to make it happen. I get in the car, I shut the door, I buckle my seatbelt, I put my key on, I hit the key, my foot's on the brakes, and the wipers flap 3 times, and then they park. That's so.
Yeah. It does it 100% of the time.
Okay,
it's never not done it.
Okay, perfect. And that will make it really easy to find out why that motor's not parking. Okay? All right, thank you very much. Chad, if you'll wait, I'll get you first, but I have to take a break real quick, so I'll be back in just a minute. 3 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're going to be here for another hour and 15 minutes. We'll be here until noon. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. We have 3 lines open, but I'm going to grab Chad right now. Chad, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a 2012 Ram 1500, and I was getting some work done over at Kurtz, and they told me that I'm going to need to get my rear end looked at, that it's making some noise. What does that really mean? I mean, how long can I drive it? What's going to happen if I'm continuing to drive it?
Okay. Well, let me ask you first. What's it doing? Is the howl related to speed? And does it come when? Is it there straight ahead or only when you turn? Give me the symptoms.
Well, to be honest with you, I never really noticed it before I went in for some work, and since I've got the truck back and they've mentioned it, I guess I can hear a bit of a whine just driving down the road. There's nothing that starts and stops or gets louder or quieter. It's just a bit, I guess a bit of a whine.
Okay. A hum or a whine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think you need to go back to Kurtz, and I know them really well, so I don't think that I'm doing this special for them. You need to go back and you need to say, I need you to take me for a ride, and I need you to help me identify the noise, and then I need you to give me an estimate to repair the noise. Because that's the 1, 2, 3. You can't just toss a hand grenade in the front seat of the car and say, hey, you got a differential problem you need to have fixed. There's more than that. And Kurtz is a great shop, and I'm sure that somebody just didn't complete the circle, but that's what needs to happen, and it's a reasonable request. Just go ask them. I can make it happen. And then in your case, does it happen when you make a right turn? When is it worse? Right turn, left turn, acceleration, deceleration. Those are the four possibilities. Acceleration, deceleration, left turn, and right turn. And you go to them and say, well, I notice that it gets really bad when I make a right turn at about 45 miles an hour. I can hear it come and go. So I want to address it. I just, you need to give me more information. And they'll jump hoops to make sure that that happens.
Okay. Well, the truck's going back there for some other stuff in a week. So I'll talk to you about that when I go back.
And tell Eric, and now I'm telling you this by winking at you, okay, because I'm winking real fast. Tell Eric if he can't find it, just have him call me, and I'll come down and help him. And he'll just laugh his butt off because he's a really good guy. And so you can say that. It's okay.
Well, I will. They just rebuilt the engine, and there's some issue with it where it's continuing to, well, it's smoking. And so they said, well, bring it back. And we'll take care of it. They thought that they told me on the repair thing that the valve guides needed to seat or something and that should stop, but it hasn't stopped. So they're
okay.
Gonna.
Well, here's the good news. You've already got a record on it, and every time you take it in, you say it's still smoking. Now valve guides will cause. They typically won't cause any smoke until you go into deceleration mode. So you're getting off the freeway at 70 miles an hour, and as you decel on the exit ramp and you come to the light, you'll have some smoke. But that's because it's a vacuum area. It's an area where we're going to be sucking the oil by the valve stems, and we just need to seat them. And so in time, it should take care of itself. But every time you take it in, you say something like that to memorialize that. So if 2 months out of warranty, all of a sudden you need some work on it, you go, wait a minute, here's four work orders where I've mentioned that I had blue smoke coming out of the tailpipe. And so I'm just giving you some self-defense tips about that kind of stuff, okay?
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I'm sure they'll take care of it. And just, I was listening last weekend, and the guy called in with the $4,500 engine rebuild, and he was having problems, and he told him, oh, you wouldn't have touched it for $10,000.
Right. Yes.
Well, I paid Kurtz $10,000, so I'm sure they're going to fix it.
Well, and yeah, I tell you what, that really generated a whole lot of my life for the whole week after that. But folks, in a nutshell, this guy calls in and he had a Ford motor and he had a bad motor and he had somebody that rebuilt it and now he's got all kinds of problems and stuff like that. And he wanted me to refer him to a shop. Well, frankly, I don't want to refer him to a shop because I don't want to send him to somebody else that's going to have to fight with the first shop to get the truck fixed. And then he, I asked him how much he said, and I think he said he spent $4,000 or $5,000. And I said, I wouldn't have bid that motor for less than $10,000. So you got what you paid for. $10,000,
yeah.
Engine, new rebuilt engine with the warranty, all the labor, all the fluids, all the hoses, all the belts, the motor mounts, the power steering, everything we touch where the labor's already paid for. Why don't we replace the hose? And so forth and so on. So, and I didn't hear anything more about it, but yeah, you're right about that, Chad. Okay, thank you, Chad. Thank you very much. Joan, you're up next. How can I help you? Hi, Joan.
Oh, hi. I didn't hear. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, I called last week about my daughter's 2005 Chevy Cobalt, about getting it going. Well, we took it to a station, and they've checked it, and now they're telling me that there is no compression in the motor or the pistons. So I'm probably going to need a new engine. Does that sound right?
Well, let me ask you a question real quick. Did you used to drive this car? Was this car something that you have driven in before?
No, I haven't. It was my daughter's car.
Okay. Well, no compression, if it's got a rubber timing belt, then if we blow the timing belt off of it, then we have no compression. And so you don't replace the motor, you fix the timing belt. And so, now sometimes the timing belt, when the timing belt comes apart, it damages the motor, but you still have to put the belt on it to see if there's damage. I think it's time to get another shop. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in Fountain Hills.
Okay. Blackwell Automotive, did you try them?
No, I didn't. We had to have it towed. It costs money to get it towed, $100 over here locally. If I go someplace else, it's a couple hundred, but it's probably worth it to do it. We should go to Blackwell's, you think?
Yeah, but I think you should call the shop back and just say, listen, and now this is between you and me, okay?
Right.
You're going to say, I've got an ex-husband that's a car mechanic, and of course we share our daughter, and he says we need more information. They can't just throw out there that it's got no compression. Is the timing chain bad? Is the timing belt bad? Does it show signs of overheat? Does it have spark? Does it have fuel? That's kind of information I need, so that you can then say to the shop that did the no compression, would you answer some of these questions? My husband wants more information, because we need three things to run an engine. We need spark at the right time, fuel delivery at the right time, and we need compression. And if we have compression, spark, and fuel, boom, we're done. However, many times an engine won't start because it's only missing one. It's missing fuel pressure, or it's missing spark. Fuel's there, but spark's not. Spark's there, but fuel's not. And then, of course, compression is the third. So we just need how much did you pay for the examination of the car?
Well, they haven't told me yet.
Okay. It needs to be somewhere in the vicinity of $75 to $125, because that's what it's going to take for somebody to check out and identify exactly what's wrong. Exactly what's wrong. And if they can't tell you exactly what's wrong and all you got's a motor, then you got a problem, and you just be nice and polite but firm. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay,
Joan.
You bet. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We're going to do another hour of this kind of talk, so you're welcome to join us now. We're at 52 minutes after the hour. Actually, just turned 53. So in 7 minutes, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to have end of the hour news, and then we're going to have some news on the front side, and about 3 minutes after, we're going to start talking about cars again. So we have five lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you want to have a more drawn-out conversation with me, here's how you do that. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at Mark Salem, like the cigarette, SALEM.com. Give me your name, give me the year, make, and model of the car, tell me what the problem is, and give me a phone number. I'll answer you back, and I'll have some questions, but if I need to talk to you, I'm going to say, give me a phone number and a time frame, and I'll call you from my blocked line on my cell phone, and when you answer the phone, I'm going to say, this is Mark Salem, I'm calling you back, so that you don't hang up on me. So that's kind of how it works. And I probably do a couple of those calls, I don't know, on Saturdays after the show. I usually do two or three and then a couple more that week. But if you could just communicate via email, that's the easiest way, because I have talk to text, and I don't have to wear my fingers down to the nub in typing. So talk to text is something I use a lot. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. You can call in and talk to me live here in just a few minutes, but you can call now. And again, my email address is Mark with a K, M-A-R-K, at Mark Salem, like the cigarette, SALEM.com. And obviously my website's MarkSalem.com, and you can look at some information there. And we have a bunch of FAQs there. And these FAQs are directly related to the most common questions we get. So we started writing FAQs back in about 2009. And in 2009, we had the same, you know, we had a lot of the same questions, and so we start building these FAQs, and so that's a pretty good place to start, because we talk about the symptoms, the diagnosis, and the repair, because that's the 1, 2, 3 of getting your car taken care of. You have to give us symptoms. What's it doing? What color's the smoke? Does it do it all the time? When you say it's overheating, where is the needle on the gauge? When you have a check engine light, does it come on at a particular time, or is it on when you first start the car? Those are the kinds of questions we're going to have and we're going to talk to you about. The idea is to get as much information. But I've been doing radio here in the Valley since, I think, 2008 or something like that. And I've been doing this a long time, and the FAQs are written around the most common questions we have, and I don't remember, but I think we have 50 or 60 FAQs. So you can look at the titles, you can look at the sheet of the FAQs and see oil consumption, my car overheats, my air conditioning doesn't work, my car won't start. And when you say your car won't start, here's the thing. Does it crank over but not catch? So does it go yeah, and it doesn't go vroom. Okay, that means one of them is cranking over, and then catching means the motor starts. So does it just crank over, but it doesn't start? Or does it crank over and then start? Or does it not crank over? That's the technical part of the discussion, and I'm really good at that because I've been doing it for 20-plus years. Well, actually, a lot more than that. Nevertheless, 602-508-09... Hold on, I'll get it right because I was looking at the screen and I shouldn't have been. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. We have open lines. There's five of them, and you're welcome to grab one. And we'll talk about car repair and stuff like that. The biggest problem we have is oftentimes we don't always get the facts, and the facts typically have to come from the driver of the car. So sometimes the woman, the wife, the mother, is sent to the repair shop by her husband or her son, and they've told her what to say. And almost 8 out of 10 times, they're telling us what they want us to do. Have them flush the fuel injectors. Have them replace the fuel pump. Have them change the alternator. The problem is most of us know that that's a recipe for disaster, because we're working off of your diagnosis, and we all know that there's a 90% chance that car is going to come back and they're going to say, we just spent $300 for an alternator and it's doing the same thing. And my response is going to be, you know what? You diagnosed it and you made the diagnosis was yours. You said it needed a new alternator. You didn't share with us why. So we never said it needed a new alternator. We just did what you told us to do. And so now the diagnosis is wrong, but you want us to give you your alternator money back, even though you were the one that made the bad diagnosis. I didn't have anything to do with it. So that's the problem in our industry today is too many times the customer tells us what's wrong with the car or what code it has, or God bless the women. The women are told by their husbands, you tell them this is what I want them to do. And that's just a recipe for disaster. And in our front counter, we're not going to do anything to your car until we get to talk to somebody who's made their diagnosis, and we want them to convince us that their diagnosis is correct, and then we can decide what we're going to do at that point. But that's just a recipe for disaster. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you have a car question, now's the time to call in. The five lines are wide open. And Gil is my engineer. He's the pilot of the airplane, and I get to sit in the second or third seat and do nothing but talk on the radio. But anyway, the phone number is 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. And perhaps maybe you've been told something by a shop and you would like me to explain it better. I can do that for you. It's give and take. We ask questions of one another, and then, you know, I'm going to need a little background with respect to what kind of car it is, how many miles it's got on it, stuff like that. But those are the issues, and they're easy to overcome. I'll walk you through it, and I'll help you out. So if you have a car problem, and somebody does, because that's the noise I'm hearing in my headphones, who might that be, Gil?
Hey, good morning to Joe.
Joe, good morning. How is it I can help you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. So, yeah, so I'm actually in the car right now. I don't know. The noise isn't happening now, but it's there's a lot. It's like multifaceted kind of. So when I'm driving, it only happens maybe like when I first start up. It's like a whistle. It sounds like it's coming from like the pulley area, and but the weird thing is that when I brake, it like goes away. And sometimes I can only really hear it if I'm on the highway and there's a barrier next to me, and then there's like a car on the left or something, and it's just like this whistle. And it definitely is like, I don't know if it's a wheel bearing or what.
Okay, stop. Okay, stop. This is a question and answer time, okay? Can you make it happen?
What's that?
Can you make it happen?
So I'm on Bell right now.
No. Listen now. It's a yes or no answer. Can you make this noise happen?
No, sir.
Okay, so you haven't figured out that the air's on or the air's off, or it's on a right turn or it's a left turn, it's above 50 miles an hour, it's below 50 miles an hour. So you got all those moving parameters. Now, is the noise a rhythmic noise? Does it mimic the speed of the engine or the speed of the car or the speed of the blower motor? Any of that?
Yes, sir. It definitely mimics speed. Like if I'm going 60, like definitely around 60, it's like a whistle, but it's like a offset whistle. It'll be like, you know what I mean, like a couple times off and once and a couple times. I don't know, it's really strange.
Okay, did you say that you had a problem on the brake, that there's something that happens to the brake pedal? Did you say something like that?
What I said was if I'm up to speed and the noise is happening, and I brake, it stops.
Okay.
The noise goes away.
Okay. Well, I can think of a couple of different things. If the noise is the noise related to the speed of the car, so you can tell when the car is doing 10 miles an hour, and you can tell when the car is doing 50 miles an hour by the noise. Yes or no?
So it doesn't happen below 60 miles an hour, like at all.
Okay. Well, as long as you can demonstrate it, then don't go to the shop on Monday morning or Friday afternoon, because those are pretty busy times and most of us can't take a drive with you. But there's lots of shops that will just say, can you make this happen? And you go, yes. And say, good, I want to ride in the passenger side. I want you to make it happen. Then I'm going to watch you, and you're going to tell me what you're doing to make it happen. And then I want you to pull off the side of the road, and we're going to switch places, and I'm going to see if I can make it happen. But if it sounds like that it's speed related, it sounds like that it may make a different noise at 40 miles an hour than it does at 60 miles an hour. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay.
And then one more is that sometimes, more often than not, when I shut it off, it'll whistle real quick right before it dies.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's identifying it, but...
Well, that's helpful, because I'm thinking that you've got something wrong with the vacuum system or the brake booster. The power brake booster. The power brake booster will often, when it goes bad, it'll have a variety of symptoms, but one of them is a whistle. And there's also a check valve in the vacuum line that attaches to the power brake booster, and sometimes it can go bad. So, I mean, the more conversation you have with the shop, the better off you are and the cheaper the diagnosis is, especially if you can take them for a ride and they're going to say to you, you can't have my technician for an hour. You better be able to make it happen, you know, in the first mile or two. And you say, yeah, I'm just going to hop on the freeway, I'm going to go 45 miles an hour or whatever. But send somebody along that's going to recognize the problem. Don't give me your oil change guy that just you hired day before yesterday. I'm looking for a seasoned veteran. So, but you have a symptoms that from the very get-go, I was thinking brake booster, especially this whistle, hit this whistle thing. That's typically a vacuum leak. And so it can be at the PCV valve, it can be at the brake booster, it can be at the cruise control module. There's a lot of different places that vacuum leak could happen. But that doesn't sound like a motor to me. That sounds like we've got something going on underneath the hood, and if you can make it happen and teach me, then certainly the shop can fix it. Find it and fix it.
Cool. And the weird thing is, one more thing, Mark, is when this first started happening, I did take it in. It was like a Pep Boys or something. I should have known better, but... And I had them look at it, and they were like, oh, you know what I mean? It's not the pulley. It's not none of that, and we don't know what it is. So I just left it, kind of went away, and now it's back. So
okay. Well, here's the thing. If you can't make it happen, if you can't teach us how to make it happen, or if we can't hear it happen, then we really can't find it because it's not happening. There's people, I mean, we've been in business since God knows how long. We've taken people's cars home. Hey, can you leave it with us for 24 hours? I've got Eddie who lives on the west side of town. He's one of my best diagnosticians. With your permission, he's going to take it home and bring it back. And is it going to happen 20 miles to west side of town and 20 miles back? Yes, it is. Boom, we're done. Then Eddie will diagnose it. So those are the kinds of things. What part of town do you live in?
So I'm up in the Surprise area, but I travel... This is another thing, too. I travel from Surprise to Phoenix every day for school. And what's weird is, Mark, it happens at the same times every day.
Okay.
Same time.
None of that helps me. None of that helps me. I can't possibly guess because it happens at the same time every day. That's just not valuable information. What's more valuable is what part of town? Give me some major cross streets, and I'll send you to a shop close by.
I'm up in Surprise, like all the way at the end of Surprise, like 134th. But so when I take the 303 to the Northern Parkway, and by the time I get off the on-ramp...
No, listen to me. Listen to me. I am not interested in talking about your problem anymore. I'm trying to find a geographical location. Tell me where you're going. Give me the major cross streets where you're going.
So I'm going to be in, Washington and, 7th. That's where I'm at every day.
Okay, Indian School and 16th Street, 25th Street and Indian School. Any of those guys close by? Indian School and 16th Street, 25th Street and Indian School? Are you close to either one of those two shops?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, one of them's Martin's Auto and one's 25th Street Auto. Martin's Auto... 25th Street Auto. Those are the two shops that are close by. Both of those guys would have no problem. If you can demonstrate it, they can find it. I guarantee you. I don't know what their diagnostic charge is going to be, but they're very good. Both of those guys are A shops. I mean, AAA shops. They're the best. Got to run, though, Joe. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we got another caller.
Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question. Is there any benefit or detriment to using motor flush in a gas engine?
Are you talking about some kind of an oil additive?
Yeah, the motor flush that you use, you know, before you change the oil.
Okay. I don't like those products, and I'll tell you why. There's no real science that says that it's going to do anything for you other than take money out of your pocket and put it in somebody else's. I'm also concerned that today's motors can run $25,000, $35,000, $45,000. So if you put something in your engine that throws the motor oil out of specification and then your engine fails, there's a large amount of shops in town that are going to run an oil analysis on it when they take that motor apart. And when they find out that it's got some kind of a bang... something wrong with the oil, then they're going to say to you, what's going on? And you say, well, I put this motor flush in there. That's going to create a problem for you, and you're not going to be able to say, no, I don't. I only put motor oil in it, because they've already done the oil analysis, and they know that something else is in here. So I'm not a fan of that. I think if you just change your oil regularly and you do your best to have them do it when the oil's kind of warm, I think that's the best you can hope for. But I don't sell engine additives for that reason, because there's no such thing as a can of scrubbing bubbles that's going to clean up your car, clean up your engine from the inside out. Because first of all, the trash is going to go to the filter, and second of all, you're going to throw the oil out of specification, and I think that's a bad idea.
All right, then I have another question for you.
Okay.
Should you use, if you buy an oil filter, is there any benefit in buying a manufacturer brand oil filter? In other words, if you have a Toyota, should you use the Toyota filter or a Fram? The aftermarket oil filter is adequate.
I can answer the question. There is no such thing as an oil filter manufacturer that just makes oil filters for Toyota, Honda, Chevy, Ford, Dodge. I want to tell you something. There's like two oil filter manufacturers in the world. They make everybody's oil filter. So I buy the cheapest oil filter I can find. I buy hundreds, if not thousands, of oil filters. Today we're Champ. We're using Champ filters. It's got a good wide selection. They have great books, and it's a great filter. But the fact of the matter is I am not. There is no such thing as a Chevrolet part. I'll give you an example. You can go on Rock Auto and put your VIN number in there about your vehicle, and tell them you want an oil filter, and it will tell you all the different brands of oil filters that fit your car. They'll tell you the part number, and it'll tell you the brand. And I'm going to tell you that every single one of those oil filters comes from two manufacturers in the United States. Two. And all they do is make the same filter, but they paint it blue for this guy and red for this guy, and they put writing on it for this guy. It's the same damn oil filter. So and your car's not going to know the difference anyway. So whether if you hang a Ford oil filter on a Chevrolet, it's not going to know. No one cares. So no, the answer is I'd buy the cheapest one I could find.
So buying any basic oil filter is fine. Buying the Extra Guard and the Super Guard or whatever they are, there's no benefit to doing that. In your opinion,
there is no benefit. And change the question, Mark. Do you buy cheap oil filters? Well, I buy thousands at a time, so yeah, I try to buy the cheap. I try to get the cost of each filter down. Mark, do you use an O-Guard filter? Do you use one with a secondary filtering system, or do you use one with a spring-loaded this or a spring-loaded valve? Yeah, I use them all, that kind of stuff, but it doesn't make any difference. I'm just looking for a company that's going to back me up if the oil filter blows off the car. If it blows the cap off of it or the can off of the seal, then I'm going to need a little help from them, and they're going to help me. But no, no matter what, if you have a 100,000-mile car, if there's an oil filter in the Fram or even Delco, I mean, there's all kinds of oil filters in different boxes that fits all kinds of cars. So I'm not an oil filter guy with respect to I want to use a Ford on a Ford or a Toyota on a Toyota. I think that's a huge waste of time. It's kind of like coolant. It's kind of like water. It's kind of like tires. They're all pretty much the same. Anyway, got to run, though, Bob. That's a great question, oil additives and oil filters. That's great. 602-508-0960, and we'll be back. So there's a couple of shops that are on the other side of the valley of one another, and they're two different shops. You got Strictly Diesel. Now, when Nate says Strictly Diesel, he means Strictly Diesel. The Chevys, the Dodges, and the Fords. Strictly Diesel. He's up at Pinnacle Peak and I-17. He's been around a long time. He sells parts 24 hours a day on their website, and he's a diesel aficionado. He knows diesels. So if you live in that area of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, or if you've got a diesel problem on a Ford, Chevy, or Dodge that nobody else can find, I promise you, Nate can find it. That's Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. On the other side of the valley is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, they've been in Mesa providing great care to their customers. Now, Brian and Thelma married up two families from the 60s and the 70s that had gas stations. So both of those young people, Brian and Thelma, have grown up in an environment where the smell of gas was typically a smell that they smelled at their house because Dad just got home and he's wearing the uniform from Union 76 or Shell or Exxon or something like that. So Thompson's is the only place in Mesa I can recommend you go. There's lots of shops, but I insist on the person be honest, dependable, well-skilled, and been around a long time. And Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They're good for that. Keith, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, sir. I called you over a year ago and a couple of basic questions about an old Willie's Jeep. I ended up buying a 1970 Kaiser Jeep and have two questions that should be quick.
Okay.
The first, I'm in the very north Phoenix area, like Anthem.
Okay.
I'm looking for a general maintenance place that I could take it for work because I'm not a mechanic.
Okay. Are you off the 101 north?
I'm north of that. Yeah, Anthem. I'm right off I-17 and Carefree Highway, so way north Phoenix.
Okay. Well, Deer Valley and I-17 is Action Auto. Deer Valley and I-17, and then Kurtz is at Bell and I-17, and both of those guys are really, really good guys. And if my mother lived in that area, I would send my mother there. She's not going to go there because her son lives in Tempe. But yeah,
okay.
But those, either one of those two guys can take care of you, and they've never
what was
let
the second
me down.
One?
Kurtz.
K-U-R-T-Z?
It's C-U-R-T-S. C-U-R-T-S, I-17 and Bell, and then you've got Action Auto, which is I-17 in Deer Valley, and the owner's name is Tom. And if you want to talk fishing, if you're a fisherman, then ask Tom. Salem says you fish with dynamite. Is that true? And then that'll open up the subject about fishing, and you'll spend the rest of your life talking fishing with Tom.
You bet. Last question, also the same vehicle. It has a 4-inch body lift that I have to take off. It's crooked and just too high center of gravity. Same two places to remove that, or would there be a different type of place to remove this body lift?
No problem. There's no problem. They're just going to lift the body off, take out all your spacers, and set the body back down. Now, there's going to be some new mounts that have to be purchased, some new donuts, mm-hmm. some new rubber and stuff. You probably ought to go to Rock Auto and get those yourself to save them the time and trouble it's going to take to find the stock body mounts. Now, they may take it apart and find out that that somebody stacked the mounts. So they put the stock one in there, then they put another one on top of it and put a longer bolt in it. If that's the case, then we just take one of them out. But I would also say to both of those guys, one or the other, whoever you pick, do you think it's a good idea for me to take the body mount, the lift off of it, and tell me what the ramifications are? Because when you set the body back down, we're going to have to probably adjust the steering column and probably do some shifter linkage adjustments because we're going to now move the body closer to the frame. And so
right.
Just have that conversation with them. They're going to be in a good position to guide you.
You bet. Is that you thinking that's a pretty costly thing to do?
No, because all they did is lift the body off the frame, and there's 4, 5, 6 mounts. So they modified them somehow. So the question then is if you say, here's a picture of the stock mounts, and here's 6 of them right here, take what they've got out and put these back in, a good guy's going to look it over and call you back and say, yep, it's a straight-out shot. It's just straight labor, lift them up, take the old ones out, put the new ones in, and set it down. But I'm going to have to adjust the steering column. I'm going to have to adjust the clutch pedal linkage because we're moving the cab away from the frame. So there's going to be some ancillary charges as well. But that's the conversation that will happen.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. I love your program. I listen every chance I get.
Thank you very much, Jack. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Do we have anybody in queue right now?
Actually, you spoke with Keith. Next is Jack.
Okay, I'm sorry. Keith and Jack, I'm sorry. Jack, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I know you've talked about this before, but my daughter has a 2005 Honda Odyssey, and she's getting ready to change the antifreeze coolant.
Mm-hmm.
And I look in the owner's manual and it says, you know, use Honda such and such type 2 or equivalent. Now, I really appreciate your discussions on how there's very few manufacturers that make stuff. And I understand Honda doesn't make their own antifreeze, but what is equivalent? How do we figure out what the equivalent is that would work in a Honda? There's all these different colors, you know, orange and yellow and blue
yeah.
and green.
Yeah, that's it.
I can't keep track of it. So can you help me understand how I figure out what to put in that Honda?
Okay. What color does it have now? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So that's the first thing I do. I'd get an old turkey baster from your wife's drawer. And tell her that she's going to have to buy a new one next time she goes to grocery shopping and suck some coolant out of it. And if it's, it can be red, it can be yellow, it can be green, it can be blue, it can be orange, whatever. Orange is like a universal, and there's nothing wrong with a universal coolant. Honda can be a blue. Honda has a variety of colors. Orange is typically something of an import, but then that changes a lot too. I want to tell you, I'd use a name brand, and there's two kinds of coolants. One of them's going to be good for about 30, 40, 50, 60,000 miles, and one's going to be good for like 100,000 miles. And the price is going to reflect that. So, but are you going to do the flush yourself, or are you going to take it and have it done?
No, she'll probably do it. She's pretty handy.
Okay.
She'll do it.
Okay. All right. So what she needs to do is there, she can buy a fluid that is going to have on the bottle Honda. She can find something like that. And if that puts her in her comfort zone, then by all means, go ahead and do that. But there's lots of universals. So if she walked into Pep Boys and she said to them, my Honda's out there. What does your parts book says of the fluid I should put in the cooling system? And they say, this one right over here. And she says, okay, is there something that you would do different? Yes, I would use this universal because it's half the price of the first one I showed you. So the universal is just as good, but it's half the price. That's the conversation that will take place.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and who's going to do she's going to do the work herself. What part of town is she in? Tell me.
Well, I'm actually in New Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So you're calling me from New Mexico, and the daughter's in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the deal. Let me tell you something.
Okay.
Have her just drive by a couple of shops, not on a Monday morning or Friday afternoon. Just drive by a couple of shops and say, my dad wants me to change. We're going to just lie. Okay. It's okay. She's not going to go to hell. My dad wants me to change the coolant, and basically, would you take a look at my car? Would you look at the coolant in the overflow or in the radiator and tell me what kind you'd use? And have her check with two or three shops, because when women come in like that, we bend over backwards to guide them, and she's probably going to get the same answer from all three shops. Boom, we're done. Then she knows what to do. Now, if she buys undiluted, she's going to have to mix it with water. But if she buys a diluted one, it's already half water and half coolant, and it's half the price of a gallon of unadulterated coolant. So she's probably better off with the ones that are already mixed with water, so she doesn't have to make sure she's got an exact 50-50 mix. So a universal that's already diluted, that's 50-50, is what she needs. I got to run. The line's I'm up against a break. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Hey, I was just talking to Jack in New Mexico. And Jack, I had a consultation because one of the guys has my cell phone number. And he says, you're not explaining coolant good enough. He's right. Right now we have green, amber, blue, orange, and red. And then we have a variety of other kind of colors that it's kind of hard to tell you. And each one of them has a different thought process, but really what we're looking at is a pre-mixed one, which is 50% coolant, 50% water, or an unadulterated one that you're going to have to mix with water. So if you're going to be doing a cooling system change, then you get a gallon of coolant of not a mixture, doesn't have water with it, and then you mix it with tap water or whatever water you want to. And then you make your own 2 gallons with a 1 gallon unadulterated. So that's kind of how it works. The color's not really that important, but if she talks to the auto parts stores, especially in New Mexico where you're from, the auto parts stores will understand what the range of protection needs to be. You see, in Phoenix, we don't need to protect your car from 60 below zero because no one's seen that in 4 million years in Phoenix. On the other hand, there are other places in the United States that see, 20, 30, 40 below zero, and those are the ones that are going to need to have that kind of protection. So in Arizona, we're on the top end of the spectrum, so we're protecting the engine somewhere in the vicinity of 180 to 230, 240 degrees, and obviously in Anchorage or in the Antarctica, in the Antarctica Circle, they're going to have a different need. So anyway, let's go with the phones, and Neil, you're up first. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. I have a 2018 Dodge Ram with a 6.7 with 15,000 miles on it.
Okay.
I have a readout that says my fuel filter is 0% life left. Do you find that at 15,000 it's necessary to change both those fuel filters?
What they're doing is they're keeping track of how many times you started it, how long you drove it, how many times you've gone through a heat cycle, the miles, if you drive it hard, if you drive it soft, blah, 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 blah. That's what they're doing. So then they're going to pop up this message center that says, based on our analysis of your driving habits, you should replace both fuel filters. I don't do fuel filters on my Dodge, and I have the same thing you have. I've got the 6.7, and I have a 12 Dodge, a 6.7, and it's got 160, 170,000 miles on it. And I'm doing my fuel filters about every 30 to 40,000 miles. I do both of them at the same time. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's not uncommon for me not to do them for 50,000 miles because I'll forget or whatever. Or I'll bring it in for an oil change, and my son will forget to instruct the technician that works for me to replace the fuel filters. If you have a problem with a fuel filter, you're going to have a tough time going 66 miles an hour, but it'll do 64 and 65 fine. But at 66, it's got a little lurch to it. That means your filters are restricting the flow of fuel, and you'll need to have those replaced. But I don't know that I've ever seen anybody have to be towed in because their fuel filters were partially plugged. That's never happened in my world. Does that help you?
Yes, that's great information. Let me ask you one other question.
Okay.
Does the fuel filter fall in the same category as the oil filter as far as what type to buy?
It does. It's okay. When you go into the auto parts store, you just say to them, I'm looking for a pair of fuel filters for my 18 Ram 6.7 diesel, and I'd like to know the different brands. And then if they give you a bunch of, you know, I got a Baseline, and I got a Fillmore, and I've got a Scottsdale, and I've got a Maine, and I've got, you know, this kind of fuel filter, but then I have a Fram, I think you'll agree you're going to grab the Fram. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So you're going to look for a name that you can trust, and you're not going to have something that's got foreign writing all over the top of it. And it's okay for you to say to the auto parts store, let's try this filter and this filter. Would you bring those out and let me look at them? And you open them up, and the gasket on this one's thick and sticks above the metal part of the shell, and the gasket on this one is just barely above the metal part of the shell, which means we don't have much crush to tighten that son of a gun up. So you can look at the difference, and you can feel them in your hand, and if one filter weighs a whole bunch more than the other filter, I take the one that has more paper in it. I take the one that's going to filter a more thorough job. Those are the kinds of things you look at.
All right. Thank you for the info.
All right, Neil. You betcha. Edwin, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have a BW 1.9-liter turbo diesel from a 1993 Jetta. I'm looking for a mechanic anywhere in the Phoenix area that would actually diagnose an issue that I have with the motor.
Okay. What part of town are you in?
I'm off the 303 and Cactus.
Okay.
But I have a trailer, so the motor's actually in a Suzuki Samurai.
Oh, okay. So. Okay. To the south of you, Larry Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School.
Larry
Harker's, H-A-R-K-E-R-S, Larry Harker's.
Oh, Harker's, okay.
Okay, and then east of you, Kurtz Auto is at I-17 and Bell. Kurtz is with a C, Kurtz Auto.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other part of the town that this vehicle regularly resides in?
Well, I have a trailer, like I said.
Oh, okay, okay.
I can take it anywhere to somebody that's willing to touch it because it's a mechanical. So usually people, if they can't throw something on a computer, they're not going to touch it.
Oh, and this is a gas motor, right?
No, it's a diesel.
Okay, if it's a diesel, you might call Nate at Strictly Diesel.
Yeah, I called Nate, and whoever I got on the line said they wouldn't touch it.
Okay, and there's a lot of us that have different cars that have eaten our lunch before, and we never forget it, and so we don't take them in.
A lot of them are worried about sourcing the parts, but that's not a problem for me to get the parts, so because I can do all that for them. But what happened with the motor was I blew a high pressure fuel line,
okay,
and I replaced it, and then I went through all the. I'm not a mechanic, but I know a little bit of the basics of it, and I. Got the motor to start. I kept the line loose so, you know, purge all the air out of it. And so it ran. And so I sat there and idled it and tried to get it up to temperature. And it developed a bog and then just stalled. And then I couldn't get her going again.
Can you get it going with ether if you sprayed ether in the mouth of the motor?
I've never tried that, no.
Let's try that. Let's try a different fuel. Just crank it over and see if it'll fire and run for a second and then shut off. That's good news. That's good news. Then that's what they're going to do anyway. They're going to see if they can get it running. And then the question is, are we missing compression or are we missing fuel? Because that's all we need on the diesel, compression and fuel to make it run.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, they'll take care of you.
I appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Edwin. 602-508-0960. The phone number's wide open. We got five of them, so if you have a car question, you can. I'm going to take a break, and I'll be back in about 3 minutes. I'm Mark Salem right here on KKNT every Saturday from 10 to noon. We're talking about cars, and my email address is mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. And if you want to do an email, just give me a phone number, because sometimes I call you back because I don't want to type a book and ask you a bunch of questions. Anyway, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. If you'd like to call us, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we don't have anybody in queue right now, but I don't want to end the show on a bad note or anything like that, so that's not what I mean, but let me explain some of the things that people do that really create problems for the people. I'll give you an example. A lady will come in and tell us to fix something on the car. We know good and well that her son or her husband found something on the internet or talked to a friend of theirs, and none of us want any part of that kind of a repair, because here's the deal. We put an alternator on the car. We don't even know why. We're just told to put an alternator on the car. We put an alternator on the car, and they come back and they say, it's still doing it. And our answer is, we didn't fix anything doing it. You instructed us to put an alternator on your car. We did that. And when it left here, we gave you the readings. At idle, it's 13.1. At wide open throttle, when you were raising it up, it's 14.2. The amperage is between 15 at idle, and when we're full field the battery, it goes to 60 amps, and that's the alternator. Well, no, you did something wrong because it didn't fix the problem. Well, we didn't fix the problem because your diagnosis was incorrect. So it's not our fault. We as an industry, that's the way to start off on the wrong foot. And you wives, you're the ones that are in the middle of this kind of a conversation, and we feel bad about that. My daughter works the front counter. My wife works the front counter. We process 20, 30 cars a day, and they hear that all the time, and they're very sympathetic to the wives. And oftentimes the shop will say, well, if your husband knows the history of the reason why we're doing this, can we just call him? And that usually short circuits the whole thing, and we can then call the husband and say, okay, tell us what symptom you got, and then tell us how. You have to understand that if we do the repair, if it doesn't work, then some people say, well, you didn't do it right, I didn't want to pay you. Well, no, we put an alternator in there. The one we took out was working fine. We noted all of that on our paperwork. We wrote on your ticket, we don't know. You just instructed us to do this. We did what you said. Your diagnosis was incorrect. You thought that would fix it, and now you want us to pay for your bad diagnosis. We don't like that. And it happens so very often, and it's typically a lady in front of us on the counter trying to regurgitate what her boyfriend or her husband or her brother told her to do. And it's just a very uncomfortable situation. We just don't want any part. Our industry doesn't like that. We don't want that kind of the customer tells us how to fix the car. Inevitably, if they want us to, they want us to do something to the car, we do it. Well, the problem's still there. That means you didn't do it right. No, that can mean that you diagnosed it wrong, and you instructed us to do the repair based on your diagnosis, so your diagnosis was wrong, and as a result, we didn't fix it. We wrote down what you said, and we have actual videotape of you at the front counter, and we've reviewed that, and you never said anything about symptoms. So perhaps maybe you just forgot that, but we're not going to make a refund because you told us to replace the alternator. That's what we did. And we called you and told you there's nothing wrong with the alternator. The diode pattern's clean. The values are good at idle. The voltage and amperage values at idle are good at 3,000 RPM. They're good. I don't know why we're doing this. And you said, no, just change it. Well, it didn't fix your problem because somebody else misdiagnosed it. And that's what happens. We have a caller. Who might that be?
Hey, good morning to Renee.
Renee, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Boy, I like your show.
Thank you.
Not much for this, but I had a quick question for you because I like your thinking. We have an F-150. It's about a year and a half old, still under warranty. And the engine light was coming on. We had it diagnosed at the Ford dealer. It's still under warranty. But it says that the catalytic converter is bad.
Okay.
And talking to another service tech, he said, you know, I've never seen one of those go. I don't know about that. But we had a diagnosis. We're going to put on a diagnostic. Also, it doesn't want to go from second. It goes from first to third every time in when we put it, you know, when we're driving. You know, it skips second gear each time.
Okay.
Now, it's under warranty. We take it and get all this fixed, but the catalytic converter is way on back order. Who knows when we'll get it. Does this sound normal? Have you heard these things?
Well, it is true that we're having parts problems. That's true. It's not uncommon for us to have at least one or two cars on our lot in Tempe that are waiting for parts that could be anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks. So, yes, that's the case.
I understand that. I believe them on that. It's just odd. Have you heard of catalytic converters going bad? And
well, here's the deal.
With the new vehicle?
I disagree with anybody who says, oh, it shouldn't go bad on a new car. Or they say, and they just throw something out there that's kind of a hand grenade on the dinner table, and it calls into all kinds of questions. Here's the deal. I know that a fuel pressure regulator, when it pops the rubber diaphragm, it causes a tremendous amount of fuel to be sent to the motor, and that fuel will not completely burn off. It'll go into the catalytic converter, and it'll melt the catalytic converter down to the ground. It's like a house that burns down inside out.
Wow.
So I can think of a lot of reasons why that would happen early on. Another easy could be that the mass airflow sensor is telling the computer we're doing 60 when we're really doing 30. The mass airflow sensor is all screwed up, so it's telling, give me 60 miles an hour worth of fuel, but it didn't tell the computer, well, the speed sensor said we're doing 30. So the computer opens up that fuel valve, which is going to melt the catalytic converter. So it's true that we find the catalytic converter, but we can't really do anything till we replace it, and then we're going to go upstream and make sure that the fuel and air mixture is correct, and we're going to watch the O2 sensors work. So when I'm driving it and I have Renee with me, I'm going to throttle it to the floor, and I want to see the O2 sensor go to 5. Good. And then I back off the throttle, and it better go to 1. Good. And I set cruise control at 65, and it's 2.5. Beautiful. 2. Beautiful. So that's what goes on. You replace the, you find out the catalytic converter's melted down. You know it's an overfuel situation typically, or it could be that it's just defective. It was made bad.
There you go.
And so there's a screen inside the catalytic converter, and we're kind of separating the different beds. And see what the catalytic converter is? You know what it is? It's a charcoal grill inside of a can. Inside of this catalytic converter is charcoal briquettes. This is for visual purposes. And then we're going to glow them red hot. So as the exhaust comes through the catalytic converter, we're going to consume the rest of the fuel molecules in the catalytic converter that we didn't consume in the engine. So what comes out of the tailpipes is good, clean air. That's what a catalytic converter is. It's a giant, big furnace.
Wow.
And it's supposed to burn the fuel that the engine doesn't consume. So, yes, there is a time when new ones fail, new alternators, new air conditioning compressors, and all that other stuff. So,
it's under warranty, thank heavens. It's just going to take a little time, and we're patient. That's okay. It still drives, and
okay.
That's all right.
But
my second part, the other part, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are you dealing with Sanderson, by the way?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, I just asked. Go ahead with the second part of your question.
Right here in Scottsdale. I know you never know who to really trust. I hate to say that. But, it's under warranty. Second part was it goes from first to third. It skips second gear every time.
Okay.
Always has.
What I would do is I would sit next to you. Are you the primary driver?
No, my husband is, but I'm always, we're together a lot. So
okay.
That's cool. I can.
Is it possible he kind of does a jackrabbit start at a traffic light? He might be the first one through the intersection. Not where he's burning the tires. Don't misunderstand. He's just kind of...
No.
Okay.
He's real slow with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what I would do, I would go take a ride with him, and I would watch him. And it could be that he's real soft-footed. And if it's soft-footed... And here's what happens. If you're kind of hard-footed at the beginning, the computer watches the RPM, the vehicle speed, and first gear. Well, it knows that when you get to the X point, you should be in third gear. So it says, well, he already used up a bunch of power on the first, so I'm just going to shift him to third. So that happens sometimes. So he can also manually take control of it by pulling it down on the shifter and shifting with the lever. So he goes first gear, and then he pushes the top of the lever, two, three. So he makes sure he's got all of it. But it could easily be the driver causing this. He just doesn't understand the computer. And sometimes we modify your driving habits just a tad. And so we would ask your husband, can you climb on the throttle a little bit harder? We don't want you to burn the tires all the way through the intersection.
Right.
But just climb on the throttle.
Okay.
And here's what I want you to do. Pay particular attention once you're at an intersection. Is your husband the first one through the intersection, or is the lane next to him got three cars already in front of him by the time he gets to the other side?
Yes.
That means he's real soft-footed. And that could be the problem. But it's not a problem. It's the computer saying, hey, I don't need, I'm going to put him in third gear.
Right, don't need second. Right, yeah. Right. Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's a great idea. You're great. You do wonderful stuff. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, Renee. And, of course, you know my wife's name is Renee, so you have to be as an exceptional lady. Now, is your husband's name Mark?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
There's the difference there, but when I called, they said, Is this Mark's wife? I said, no. That was a good chuckle. Love the whole station. I listened to all you guys. You're wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay, you bet. You know, there's good shops out there, and I'm going to touch base on a couple of them real quick for you. You got Auto Dynamics in Sun City. Chuck's been there since 1982, and I've known Chuck for a very, very long time. I've known Chuck since 1970, 72. So Auto Dynamics he's on north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue, and Chuck pays his technicians a salary. He doesn't pay him a commission or a percentage of the repair bill because Chuck says he wants to ensure that they don't sell unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're in Sun City, I would love to recommend two or three shops there, but I can't. I can't because I can't find them, but I can tell you that Auto Dynamics in Sun City is a good place to go. Then you've got Larry Harker's Auto. We talked about that in the last segment, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Between Bob, the shop guy, and his nephew, those two guys are one of the finest pair of technicians. Bob has tremendous fundamentals on older cars, but his son-in-law, or I don't remember, he is really good on the new cars. So you've got old and new, and these two guys work together like there's nobody else. So Harker's has been around since 1967. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, then Harker's is a good place, and that's assuming that you're looking for a repair shop. That's just assuming. And then you got Tom Blackwell is over at 40th and Greenway. Tom and I have been friends, and we're two peas of a pod. Both of us have huge mouths. Both of us think that we know everything about cars that anybody could possibly know, although I know a little bit more about Tom than Tom does. But both of them are very principled, and it's not uncommon for Tom and I to dismiss an employee after the second time we found out that he didn't follow procedures or he's not at the skill level he needs to be for the money that we're paying him. So it is Tom and I both are well seasoned in auto repair, and I've been a master technician since 1991, which means I've passed all 8 automotive service tests. So from transmissions to differentials to air conditioning, climate controls to fuel delivery to emissions, all that kind of stuff, I recertified on a regular basis. And so Tom's that way too. Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. He's a good guy. And then you got Phil at Automatic Transmission. Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in business since 1968. He started with the Power Glides, the 2-speed Power Glides and the GMs. He started with the old torque flights on the Chrysler, and now he's morphed into these 5, 6, 7, 8-speed automatics that are shifting by the computer. He knows the fundamentals, so he can diagnose those problems. So if you have a problem with a transmission and you want someone to take a drive and you can show them the problem, then stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington, but you can't do that on Monday morning or Friday afternoon. for obvious reasons. So obviously Tuesday about 10 o'clock in the morning is a perfect time for you to do that. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. My email is mark@marksalem.com, Mark with a K, Salem like the cigarette, mark@marksalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT.